Now, authorities continue to investigate the recent mass shootings in Georgia and Colorado. Last week, a man opened fire at three different spas in Atlanta, killing eight people. And on Monday, a man shot and killed 10 people at a supermarket in Boulder. President Biden and congressional Democrats are calling for tougher gun control measures. Republicans say such moves would violate the Second Amendment and that the focus should be on other root causes of crime. Our next guest says gun violence isn't just about politics or gun control and that we need to change the way we look at the problem. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to these recent mass shootings? Are you frustrated, scared? Do you see possible solutions, whether it's government regulation, societal change? What questions you have for our guest about gun violence in America? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Zimmerman is the Marshall H. Becker Collegiate Professor of Public Health at the University of Michigan. He's also a professor of health behavior and health education, as well as psychology. He's director of the Prevention Research Center of Michigan and the Michigan Youth Violence Prevention Center. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, there's almost a script of how people from across the political spectrum respond when we see incidents of high-profile gun violence like this. What questions do you want people to start asking and thinking about when you see stories like this in the news?
Well, I think there's a couple of issues that I think are important. One is I try to take it out of the political realm of all the gun rights and gun control, and I reframe it as we need research and data to be able to think about ways that we can prevent the epidemic, really, of firearm death and injury. Just to give you some statistics, 10 to 24-year-olds in the United States die at about a rate of 20 per day. And we hear the news, and here I am on the radio because of these mass shootings. Mm-hmm. And in fact, as horrific as they are still relatively rare when we look at the 40,000 people in the United States that die each year from gun violence of one kind or another. And by gun violence, I mean it's homicide and suicide. Suicide accounts for 40% of gun-related deaths. It's about 60% attributable to homicide. So there's a problem out there with the ubiquity of guns and injuries that occur from them that goes far beyond these horrific events that happen all too often in the United States. And so I try to think about it as not a gun control issue. We didn't think about car crashes and car deaths as a car control issue. We talked about it as car safety, and we frame it as firearm safety. We, my colleagues and I, we have engaged gun owners. We don't vilify gun owners. This is not about taking away anybody's guns. This is about doing better than having 20 of our citizens between the ages of 10 and 24 die every day. It's eight kids die every day from 0 to 17 from a firearm of one kind or another. And again, it's suicide. When a gun is involved, it occurs. It ends in death 90% of the time. So, and then you already want to know what the other 10% are like. And often a suicide is a impulsive act that especially younger people are engaged in, and there could be talked away from that edge, so to speak. So there's a lot more we can do that we have to do as a society. And I don't like calling it gun control. I just think that goes down a rabbit hole that is not helpful in trying to think about how do we make guns and guns and focus on gun safety.
I talked to a guest from the Violence Project a while back who said it's not just one gun violence problem. The solutions that might deal with, say, mass public shootings might be different from the suicides you were just talking about. Domestic violence or gang-related shootings might require different solutions. Is this something where we have to stop looking for, I guess, one magic solution and try to find solutions to all these kind of different but related problems?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself, actually. Just to give a sense of this, about 5 years ago, 3 years ago, the number of firearm-related deaths surpassed the number of car deaths in the United States. And you're absolutely right. Suicide issues and homicide issues are really have different underlying antecedents. And so you're right. There isn't one fix for all of this. But the sad part is, in the United States, we have not invested in the kind of research that we need to do to kind of understand the antecedents, understand what works, understand the different aspects of what it might look like in rural versus urban areas. Just to give you a sense of it, in 2017, the U.S. spent $1 million annually on research addressing firearm-related deaths among 1 to 17-year-old kids. That's compared to $88 million for motor vehicle deaths. If we spent money to really get the research base that we need to be able to give us informed answers, we would be able to tailor, depending on what where we are, what age groups we're looking at, whether it's a suicide or a homicide or gang-related, accidental mass shootings. You're absolutely right. They're all different, just like in cars. We saw that people who drank and drove, so we said you can't drink and drive. We saw data about being distracted when you're texting, so now there's laws about texting. But the answers aren't only policies. Some of them are behavioral. Educating people about how to have a firearm in the home safely, locked and unloaded, ammunition locked separately from the firearm, making it difficult for people in that household to reach that that firearm. Those are some of the things that we need to do more research, but we know that those kinds of things are certainly helpful.
Talking to Mark Zimmerman from the University of Michigan, a public health researcher there, talking about ways to reduce the impact of gun violence in the United States. You can join in with your questions and thoughts at 800-642-1234. Mark, I've seen some suggestions lately that one predictor to watch for the risk of various kinds of gun violence is past incidents of violence with or without a gun. Is that, first of all, is that true, do you think? And if so, does it point us in any direction to say, how can we prevent that person who's committed assaults, say in the past, from becoming someone who commits a gun homicide in the future?
Well, yes. I mean, on almost every behavior that we engage in, past behavior is probably the single most best predictor of subsequent behavior. And yes, some of the precursors of violence with the firearm is starts with violence in other ways, whether it's using a weapon or not. Yes, there are many of the similar factors that predict violent behavior often result subsequently, potentially, in firearm behavior as well. But some of it is access. Suicide, obviously, is a different kind of a behavior than homicide. Homicide is a little bit more interpersonal directly. Suicide may result from interpersonal isolation or bullying. So some of those same factors do predict subsequent factors. Past violent behavior is a predictor of firearm behavior. Absolutely.
So what can we do with that, though? If we know that, is there a way that we can reach out to that person who has committed that violent act in the past and have help them not do it in the future? Or is it a matter of how do we make sure that person doesn't get a gun? I don't know. What kind of interventions can that point us toward?
Well, you know, that's the million-dollar question. And one of the things that we're looking at, some of the things that we have found is a way to reduce youth violence is to engage youth in positive community change, working with adults on those positive community change, helping them develop self-confidence in themselves and feeling some ownership in their community, thinking critically about their community. We have them do photo voice projects, and they start seeing a future for themselves. And they start seeing more positive and engaging in more positive behaviors and get more positive role models. That's a strategy that we have found, but there are many others. In many urban centers around homicide and crime are often correlated. And in many of our urban centers, there are neighborhoods with lots of vacancy and greening, cleaning up the vacant lot, taking care of debilitated houses so that they're, at least if they're boarded up, they're boarded up in ways that don't show abandonment. We have found that those kinds of activities can reduce homicides. In terms of suicide, sometimes it's identifying the early signs and having people report those early signs. In schools around the country, there's anonymous reporting systems where if they see their friend is starting to give away everything that they really cared about and starting to withdraw from everybody, those are signs for potential psychological issues and depression that could result in a suicide or a suicide attempt. And there's ways of getting trying to help people identify those and report it to other people so that an intervention can happen before the tragedy occurs. So there are strategies and are efforts out there that are aimed at doing this kind of prevention work.
We're talking about gun violence in the United States and how to prevent it with Mark Zimmerman, professor of public health, health behavior, and health education and psychology at the University of Michigan. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions. Have you seen an anti-violence initiative in your own community? How did it work? 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about efforts to prevent gun violence and gun suicide in the United States in all the various forms it can take. Mark Zimmerman is with us from the University of Michigan. He researches public health issues related to violence. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Let's go to your calls now. Michael is with us in Milwaukee. Michael, hello.
Hi, guys. This is a really great topic, and I agree 100% with your guest. It's something I've been thinking about for a long time. I used to be in the military. I used to work with weapons. And I know that people in America need to stop thinking of this as a gun problem and more of a people problem. We need to change our way of thinking. We need more safety. We need more people to understand what they're doing when they use guns. And like your guest said, we need these initiatives to bring this to the public so they know what they're doing and we can lower these crimes, these certain crimes. And I just wish that we could push this more a lot faster than other things that we seem to push.
Michael, thanks for the call. Mark?
I don't think we're going to get gun. You know, we are a gun culture. We have to just face that fact. There are 330 million or more guns in citizens' hands in the United States. Many people own more than one. A third to half of the of U.S. citizens own a firearm. So it seems like a fool's errand to try to do anything about that. I think what we have to do is think about what are some of the policies, some of the technological and behavioral strategies we can do to avert the precursors to violence and gun violence. And we need research to kind of get an idea about what are the common factors that occur in different settings. And we need to sort of think about the root causes of some of this violence. And I don't think does this any good to vilify gun owners or try to get engaged in the political debate. In the meantime, while we're doing all that, people are dying. And what we're also not talking about is, besides the death, there's the family that's left behind and the trauma there. We find that people who are exposed to violence have all sorts of other psychological problems and physical problems later in life from the stress and the PTSD that they experience from that. I would say, you know, the key is to think ecologically, think about the multi-level influences and how our responses might be different. But at the end of the day, we have to kind of come together as a nation and decide that this is something we want to do something about. We decided we were going to land on the moon. We decide we're going to go to Mars. We can solve this problem. And we can solve this problem just like we're solving the problem with cars. We don't have to take people's cars away to make cars safer to drive, people to learn how to drive them more safely, make our roads safer, and we can do a very similar model with firearms.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Owen next in Wauwega. Owen, hi.
Yeah, hi. Listening to this program, just thinking about ways we can report more as far as, you know, the media goes on the daily gun violence statistics. Trying to find my way through Google here and just see if I can find any accurate information day to day, which is hard to find when I navigate. So my question is, I remember on January 1st, I was listening to Indianapolis, Indiana news. There was 5 gun deaths overnight on January 1st in Indianapolis. But here in Wisconsin, we don't hear about that. And because it wasn't a mass shooting, we don't hear about it on the national media. So a lot of people, I think that we're just somewhat oblivious or ignorant to what's really going on with gun violence. And as a hunter and a gun owner myself, I also know, you know, the lethal capabilities of, say, a handgun compared to a deer rifle, there's a big difference. And an AR-15 isn't even as lethal as your high-powered deer rifle, but it's the choice based on some of these people's understanding of what they hear about on the media or on the Facebook or different things that they're listening to.
Owen, thanks a lot for the call. A lot there. First of all, Owen saying we see the reporting when there's the mass shooting. We don't necessarily see the day-by-day steady trickle that you were talking about earlier, Mark, the daily death toll.
Well, that's right. I mean, it goes back to, and thank you for that question or the comment about we don't pay attention. We don't even know much about these different instances, partly because for the last 30 years, the federal government was not funding any kind of firearm research. You know, it would be very useful if we could get information about where are the guns from, what happened in those incidents. And we're starting to be able to cull together those data to start seeing, are there patterns? What are the patterns? Where are the patterns? But without sort of the research base and the database and a common place for us to get that information, even if it's per state, makes it very difficult for us to understand what really is going on. And, you know, in defense of the media, you know, just like one car crash is not all that interesting, but a pile up on a highway is something that they would want to cover because a one car crash is too common. And it's the same thing with firearms. The mass shootings make the news. The everyday shootings do not make the news. And I think you're absolutely right. We need to start paying attention to all of it. And I think we need to have basically as a society decide that this is something we need to address and that we want to pay attention to. We decided as a society, both politically and just because we care about it, because people care about it, to do something about the opioid epidemic. Well, there were more people in the state of Michigan that died of firearms than opioids here last year. And yet millions and millions and millions of dollars are being spent to understand what we need to do to staunch the opioid epidemic. And I probably sound like a broken record at this point, but we do need to lift the veil, avoid the conversation that is this divisive about rights and about the politics of this. This isn't about taking guns away. This is about making guns safer. This is about making our society safer. Yeah, it's not rocket science, but we have to decide that we want to make an investment.
And as you mentioned, just in our last minute, that lack of investment, federal funds very limited in places like the CDC to look at gun violence as a public health issue. Do you see that starting to change at all?
Yes, I'm very encouraged that the Congress has identified about $50 million a year to begin studying this, and that we're in year two of that funding cycle. And I think we could increase that. And partly, we can also start lifting the veil that there was a long time where we weren't allowed to study of firearms if we had federal dollars. We were restricted. So those restrictions are lifting as well. And I think that's kind of what we need. And I think if we decide, like we did, we've spent billions of dollars on car safety. And now people automatically get into a car and buckle their seatbelt. They don't have to, they don't think about it anymore. Similarly, our car people, a selling point of our cars is the safety features it has. We need to start to change the culture around firearms as well in the same kind of way, both in terms of the search and in terms of, you know, what's acceptable and what is the, how we're going to live in a society where guns are as ubiquitous as they are.
We'll leave it there. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, and thank you to the callers.
Mark Zimmerman is professor of public health, health behavior, and health education and psychology at the University of Michigan. He's director of the Prevention Research Center of Michigan and the Michigan Youth Violence Prevention Center. We talked to him about gun violence in the United States, what it might take to reduce the numbers.